Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
And instead it goes to Bailey!
Happy New Year, villains, and gather round for our first Gather Round the Lamp of 2024, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by underagaslitlamp.com. We have some catching up to do from an eventful festive period in B6 as we look ahead to the FA Cup third round and, of course, the January transfer window. I'm your host, Andy, and joining me this week, hopefully recovered from his New Year's Eve exploits, Daniel.
Hi, Andy. Hi, listener. Just about recovered. It took about 24 hours, but I think I'm just about there. I'm not sure if it was festive excess or just giddy on Aston Villa's success at the moment. So I can't help myself. It feels like a celebration the whole time.
Yes, yeah. So, and sometimes they merge together, though.
That's it, yeah. Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been an interesting kind of couple of weeks with Aston Villa, hasn't it? And we'll just start by just catching up on a couple of games that we missed during that period. And the first one was the 1-1 draw at home against Sheffield United on the Friday night. And we missed the chance by drawing that game to go top for Christmas. If we'd won, we would have been top at Christmas, but had to settle for second or third place, unfortunately. It was a bit of a strange game, and got to right towards the end of the game when Cameron Archer nicked a goal to put Sheffield United ahead, and thought they'd nick the points, but Nicolò Zaniolo came off the bench to head an equaliser in injury time. Obviously, we won't go too much into this game; it's so long ago now. But I mean, it wasn't. In the end, it wasn't the match we thought that the winning run would come to an end. The home run of 15 games, we assumed it would go up to 16 with this one. But how important do you think it was that we did snatch that point at right at the end there?
Yeah, disappointing. You're right, and we don't want to dwell too much on it because even though it was only a couple of weeks ago, it feels like a lifetime ago now. But snatching late goals is really important. We're not going to use the T word just yet, but the best teams, the ones chasing trophies, get late goals, whether that's to salvage a point or to get a win. And I think we were a long way from our best in this game, but got something out of it, which is the most important thing. Hat tip to Cameron Archer, though, who, if anyone was going to score against us, fair play, it was Cameron Archer. And it was a bit of a sucker punch of a goal. But as I say, we did well to come back into it. And Zaniolo's first goal right as well. So he's off the mark now, too.
Yeah, it was his first goal in the Premier League. He'd scored a couple of weeks before, which so it's kind of nice. He has got off the mark because that was becoming a little bit of a weight on his shoulders, wasn't it? It's just whether he'll be with us. I've not really heard much about him, and I kind of expected him to come on against Burnley at some point, but he didn't appear. So there is some talk, isn't there, that he can only, if he plays a certain number of games, then we have to sign him. And Galatasaray have built certain things into that loan deal, which we might be trying to avoid. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on. Whether they feel he's done enough really to stay. I'm not sure whether he'll be with us much longer. I'm not sure.
Yeah, who knows? And it's an interesting one because we need all the warm bodies we can get, especially at this time of year, the festive period when you've got a game every 3 days. But it feels odd to not be bringing him on in case there's a clause there. It's I don't know, it's almost like when you're, and this is showing my age, when you were younger and you had the old pay-as-you-go phone, and you didn't want to get anyone to pick up the phone because you didn't want to be charged for it. So you tell your parents you got there safe by ringing three times and letting them just not pick up. It feels like the same thing with Zaniolo. We're ringing and leaving it on the hook, and it will be a case of break glass in case of emergency with them, I think. But I don't know do you know what the number of games is, or is it just a...
I really don't. For some reason, I've got the number 15 in my head, but I don't know. And it feels like he's already played quite a lot of games for Villa. He has had, you know, he's certainly been involved. And whether it means starts or substitute appearances, I'm not sure really. But either way, I mean, it was a really timely goal by him. You know, and it kind of showed what one or two people have been saying, that he might be useful as a kind of, if not a number nine, a kind of off number nine type player.
Yeah, I agree, especially with Diaby going off the boil too. It gives us another option in there to bring him on. And as you say, late goals always matter. But players breaking their goal scoring droughts would be something that came back to haunt us a couple of days later on Boxing Day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we'll move on to that now. I think it was a shame we didn't quite get to the top of the league for Christmas. That's always a nice thing, but in the grand scheme of things, it's probably not that important. It would have just been a nice little bonus, wouldn't it? But but of course, Boxing Day came along, and Villa went to Old Trafford to face Man United, and it was a rather chastening 3-2 defeat in the end. After being two goals up at half time, McGinn and Dendonka had scored for Villa, Dendonka's first goal for the club. And we seemed to be in control for the first 30 minutes or so. And then United did start to sort of get in around us and get behind us a little bit. And the second half was a bit of a bloodbath, really. I think the defence were all over the place, and certainly highlighted some issues, I think, with that central defensive partnership of Carlos and Longley, but also just Villa were just felt like they were off the boil generally. The passing was off. Certainly, you know, Douglas Luiz and McGinn were struggling to hold on to the ball in midfield, and it seemed kind of inevitable, really, if United could start taking their chances that they would get back into the game in some way. And of course, they went on to win 3-2. It was extremely disappointing given the polar opposite form, really, of both teams. United have been, you know, very poor throughout the season, really, and obviously went on to lose to Nottingham Forest this weekend as well. But it does seem this Villa team needs the occasional kind of gut punch, really, in order to kind of step back and reset. And, you know, I just wondered, did this result overly concern you, or do you see it as a bit of a one-off aberration that they can learn from?
It's a tough one because we didn't play well at all. I think we can't sugarcoat it. I think even when we were 2-0 up, I was saying to people that we not played well at all here. And it had shades, second half had shades of that Newcastle game, first game of the season, where it felt like every time they came forwards, we were going to leak a goal. And there's a couple of things that I take away from this. One is the Christmas period is absolutely crazy. There's a game every 3 days. Teams drop points. I mean, all the teams around us drop points. What was it? Arsenal lost to Fulham and West Ham, which no one saw coming. Liverpool dropped points against United. Spurs drop points, Man City drop points against us. These results happen around the Christmas period, and you know, losing away at Old Trafford stings more these days than it used to. And I think we just ran into one. But the other problem is, it kind of speaks to where we're at, but we went there with what, our kind of third, fourth choice centre-back pairing and without our star midfielder, and we're expecting to turn them over. And that's part of the problem as well. We're seeing the limits of Villa's strength and depth. And I think I've mentioned it to you, Andy, before, and to a couple of other people. For me, the Boubacar Kamara suspension is what really killed us this festive period. It was a silly suspension to take. And I think we've seen the impact of that in the games that we've struggled in. And it's no surprise. We we said it about Man City when they lose Rodri, they're a completely different team. I think we're maybe starting to see Kamara's importance to us there, is that when he's out of the team, we don't have the player who can protect the back line but also progress the ball through midfield. So I think against United, we just couldn't play out at all. It was as disjointed I've seen us play in a long time.
Yeah, that was the thing that kind of highlighted to me, really, was that just trying to play through that midfield was so difficult. It was almost like United set traps in midfield for us, and it was almost like whenever Luiz or McGinn got the ball with their back to goal, it was, you know, there were players on them like lightning quick and taking the ball off them or putting them under enough pressure that they made a mistake. And it's not really a performance I've seen from Villa too much, certainly through the course of last year. You know, it was kind of an old-fashioned Villa performance, you know, the sort of performance you'd expect, you know, and the wider football world of neutrals would expect Villa to go to Old Trafford and get turned over and it be a little bit sort of comfortable, really, and that's how it felt in the second half. I know we did well to get our noses ahead, and we were playing, you know, pretty well in the first half, but it just felt like it was disjointed, like you say, the midfield, you know, and it probably was Camara not being there. It's probably a big part of it was obviously Pau Torres not being there, who's again probably on a national scale, don't think he is amongst Villa fans, but on a national level, he's probably gone under the radar still, you know, as being one of the most important players in the team, really, for how we attack as much as anything. So, you know, missing those two was a really big deal, I think. I just wondered, you know, you mentioned the defence, obviously, the partnership there. Does it affect us? Does it weaken us not having Konsa? Because obviously, Diego Carlos is kind of playing in his position on the right hand side of the defence. Do you think having Konsa at right back is hamstringing us a bit as well?
I don't know if it's hamstringing us, but it's taking away one of our best players from his preferred position. I think Konsa's pace and that recovery pace is so important in the centre, and I think, you know, they're no slouches, like Lenglet and Carlos are no slouches, but they're not rapid. Konsa is rapid. He can, when we play that high line, if we make a mistake, he can get back. And at right back, he can't do that as well. And I also don't feel like he's as comfortable on the ball out at right back. And as you say, we'll talk a bit about the January transfer window, but right back's becoming a real problem area for Aston Villa, whether it's Konsa out on the wrong side or whether it's, you know, Cash not playing brilliantly there. It's starting to look like a real hole in the lineup, and that's fine in some games. Like, you can carry that when you've got your full complement of players, but when your players are out of position, players are out of form, you start to really feel that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and we will discuss that a bit later, but that definitely feels like probably the main target position, really, doesn't it, for Emery and Monchi this month. The other thing I'll mention about this game is we did have two really good chances at, I think, either 2-1 when we were 2-1 up. I think Bailey possibly had a really good chance.
Yeah.
And then at 2-2 as well, McGinn had a really good chance, which he kind of snatched out a little bit and it was cleared off the line. You know, so I suppose that's the encouragement, isn't it? That even when we're kind of quite up against it and we were looking really shaky and it looked for all the world like United were going to win the game, which they did. But one of those chances goes in and suddenly it turns around again and you're on the front foot again. So I think from that perspective, there was some positive to take that, you know, even playing like that at Old Trafford and United with their tails up, we could have got something or won the game, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this team reacts well to adversity. We've seen it happen when we concede, we tend to go on the front foot again. And look, as Emery said after the game, didn't it? It was like, what, 39 points? Wow. It's kind of, he knows, yeah, what's going on. And justifiably so, we've got a little bit carried away with Villa's success. As I say, we're going to Old Trafford depleted after a stretch of games and expect him to come away with something. And it's testament to the sheer magic that the man's working there. And as you say, it would have been lovely to be top at Christmas. And I don't even mind the defeats. The problem with this defeat was that it felt a little bit, as you say, like old Villa. It was, the word Emery uses all the time is control, and we didn't feel like we're in control. Whereas against Sheffield United, we were in complete control. We didn't take our chances, but we controlled that game. And this United performance felt a bit harem and scarem, and the last thing you want to do is go down that route again. But yeah. And there were touches of that against Burnley too, which I know we'll come on to, but it's... I'm old enough to remember the last time Villa were top of the league at Christmas, and it was that John Gregory era where we were unbeaten, top of the table, and then we just fell off a cliff. And that, I think that's where I'm at the moment. I'm a little bit nervous because I've been here before. I don't want to get too carried away with it and then us just have a terrible second half of the season. Yeah. So partly I'm trying not to worry about these results, but also partly I think... As I say, it happens. The Christmas period is ridiculous. And I think the Premier League is a crazy place to be at the best of times. But over the festive period where there seems like there's a match every day, then I think it's especially a weird place.
Yeah, it is. And teams playing at different times and with different kind of recovery periods, isn't there, quite a lot of the time. And, it was an odd night. But it was so familiar in the sense that we've seen Man United come from behind to beat us on so many occasions, and it's rare that we would go into a game like that as the better team, you know, and expecting to win. You know, normally when they've done that to us, it's kind of been expected that they would, but this time it wasn't, and that was that's a sign of how good we are and how poor they are, relatively speaking.
And the Aston Villa charity is still going strong. As we've said before, if there's a striker that needs a goal, line him up against Villa and almost guaranteed they'll do it. I think Hoyland hadn't scored in 1,000 minutes or something ludicrous, and then a really tidy finish, to be fair. But it's feels like classic Villa. If you need a goal, you're on a bit of a drought, just play us and we'll happily let you score.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it? And I'm sure every team feels
like
that.
That's probably true, yeah. That's it. A little bit of an echo chamber as Villa fans. We can't help ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. But, it was disappointing. And, of course, whenever you get those setbacks, it's how you bounce back, really, isn't it? And we went on to face Burnley, who were really struggling in their first year back in the Premier League. Under Vincent Kompany, and Villa were without injured players, Luca Dean and Youri Tielemans, with Torres only fit enough to be on the bench. Of course, he came on in the second half. Matty Cash was also missing due to a virus, and Boubacar Kamara completed his 3-match suspension in this game. Moussa Diaby and Leon Bailey both started, and Moreno and Ramsey continued to build their fitness with starts also. There has been a lot of talk about sort of the injury issues at other clubs and how they struggled, particularly sort of Tottenham and Newcastle, sort of in the media. But very little really has been spoken about in terms of Aston Villa. And obviously as fans, we know that we're missing a lot of players, or we have been, and we understand it and how it weakens us. Emery and the squad have appeared really to cope pretty well with the absentees. Do you think we perhaps deserve a little bit more credit for being able to shuffle the deck?
I think so. I think you're right. We've had as bad an injury run as anyone this season. I think maybe because ours happened so early, the Buendia and Mings ones were first game of the season or just before. And the Ramsey and Moreno injuries too have been a big deal on Villa because we haven't been able to rotate those positions. And even now, I don't think either of those are up to speed, are they? They still look a little bit off their best. And then, you throw in suspensions, you throw in fatigue, and we've had all those European games too. The squad is stretched thin. And it was looking deep at the start of the season, but I think even the deepest squad struggle at this time of year. So So fair play to Emery for getting through it. And I think that's not a flash in the pan either. We've got such a defined style of play now that the players, even if they're players coming in or juggling positions, know exactly what's expected of them. I think McGinn has played right, left, up front, defensive midfield in the last few weeks and knows what he's doing in every position. You've got Lenglet comes in and sure isn't the best, but he's playing a certain style. And I think that's the joy of it. We've got a defined style of play now, so it doesn't matter who comes into the side, we'll play the same style. How effective it is what's affected, I guess, by the personnel that come in. But you're right, we've had our fair share of injuries. Although I kind of still like us going under the radar. I hated all the Sky Sports stuff talking us up as title contenders before matches. I'd much rather go back to being the quiet team that's coming up on the rails.
Yeah, I think that's true. And also, I'm never a fan of big, wealthy football teams making excuses like that. You know, it never comes across well when managers or supporters of a team kind of complain too much about injuries, because you think, well, you know, that's if your squad's not good enough, that's the fault of the club, isn't it? That's and I know things, obviously sometimes clubs have really bad injury problems, but you know, that's the nature of the game, isn't it? And it's how you deal with it, really. And it's about adjusting and making the most of the players you do have, which Emery just seems brilliant at, really. And you know, he's not afraid to alter, is he? He's not afraid to change the approach for certain games and try to maximise, you know, what he's got against the opposition as well, which I find really obviously intriguing and really great to see. After, you know, usually we're just on the other end of it, aren't we? You know, and sort of the sitting duck, really. So it's great to see. But yeah, I'm obviously you want your best players back, but it's been interesting to see how they've coped, really. And I think on balance they've kind of done okay, but
I'd say 4 points is par for the Christmas period. And I mean, further to what you were saying there about Emery, I think the really nice thing is he's not all over the media complaining about this either. I mean, we see Arteta whinging about decisions, Pep will whinge about just about anything. Klopp looks like he was going to lose his mind in the game last night. And the managers feel the pressure at this time of year too. And what I've really liked about Emery is he's not come out and got involved in any of that nonsense, despite having, in my mind, a laundry list of ready-made excuses there that he could call on. He's still just towing the same line, which is that, you know, there's seven teams better than us. We're playing as well as we can do. We'll take it one game at a time. And I think he's doing a really good job of keeping that squad grounded. And rather than, you know, getting them too high or too low, we just seem to be ticking along no matter what. Playing well some days, not so well other days, but still kind of putting in the shift. And he's got us through and fortunately get a bit of a break now. But I've really appreciated that man management and that media management side of him, actually, this period. Because it's something that we often ignore with Emery. We look at him as a tactician. We look at the change he's made on the pitch. But, I mean, gone are the days where we're making headlines because our manager's saying ridiculous things. We're just quietly ticking along with things. And no one's getting thrown under the bus. No one's getting praised to all ends of the earth. It's just seems like business as usual.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think it's the way he carries himself, isn't it? And I think this is the thing that is so nice. I think he's helped by the fact that no one is really, there's no huge expectations on Villa to be where they are. I think other managers, you know, of the, you know, the powerhouse clubs come under pressure for losing, you know, a game. You know, obviously Arteta is kind of under the pump at the moment because he's lost a couple of matches, and you know, kind of it's all about the title, isn't it, with these clubs. Whereas Villa, you know, if Villa dropped down to seventh, no one is raging about Emery and losing his job, is he, and that sort of thing. So I think he's helped by that. Obviously, if this continues 2 or 3 years down the line, and you know, they're in the Champions League and they're having a dodgy time. Things might, the pressure might ramp up a little bit then, but, you know, we're looking too far ahead.
I was going to say, let's not get too carried away here. Let's enjoy this moment while it lasts.
Yeah.
You're right, though. The pressure is different at Villa, but I think, again, he's managed that. He's told, his communication with the fans has been really good. It's, you know, I've not been on the pod for a couple of weeks, and I know kind of the atmosphere at Villa Park's been a subject of discussion, and he's helped create that, right? He's brought the fans and the team closer together, both when things are going well and when they're not going so well. And I kind of really have respected that side of his job. And obviously winning always helps with that. But I think Villa fans have, the manager's played his part, and Villa fans are doing the right thing as well by not getting too carried away. Dreaming of Champions League aside.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you've got to, haven't you, when you're in this position at Christmas, it's obvious that you're going to start looking at that, you know, and that is a possibility. And, you know, we can get into that top four. You know, we've as good a chance as anyone, haven't we, at the moment? So, you know, let's see how we go. But first half of this game wasn't overly inspiring, although they did get the couple of goals. They seem to be sort of labouring a little bit again with the passing game, not quite clicking. Bailey put Villa ahead following an excellent sort of trademark bit of forward play by Ollie Watkins. It feels like it's turning into a really fruitful combination, those two players in particular. But then Burnley levelled it up a minute later through Amdouni, who kind of got on the end of a free kick routine. Felt that Villa's marking left rather a lot to be desired for this goal. And Villa were back in front then just before half time with another Watkins assist, another really good bit of play. Beat the offside trap and laid it off to Diaby, who slotted it past the keeper. We haven't seen too much of this Bailey, Diaby and Watkins sort of threesome playing together. But on the face of it, it proved to be obviously quite effective during this game. Do you think this is kind of, we might see more of these three together on the field, or do you think this was just to, because the players were missing and we needed to pick 11 players?
I think a bit of both, if I'm honest. I find it really interesting that both Diaby and Bailey playing, because I think it maybe changes the way Watkins plays a little bit. We've been used to Ollie the poacher this season, haven't we? He's always in the box. He's not making those unselfish runs as much that he used to. He's just on the end of chances. But I think when you play players like Bailey and Diaby, who are much more direct, Ollie needs to become more of the creator. And we saw that here. He laid on two goals. And I think I saw there's all sorts of 2023 tables going around at the moment, kind of showing how good Villa have been in the calendar year. But how good Ollie Watkins has been too. I think it's only Haaland, Salah and Kane who've got more goal involvements than him. And he's got a large chunk of assists in there. And I do think when you play that front three together, Ollie has to play a slightly different role. And against Burnley, he was making a lot of those unselfish runs. He was pulling defenders around. And maybe that's kind of his evolution as a player, is knowing when to stay in the middle and when to make those runs out wide or into the channel. And I think against a deeper block like Burnley put up against us, that's what he does. But I mean, the other thing you've got to do, and Emery would probably say, is you've got to play your form players. You don't not start Leon Bailey at the moment because he's in ridiculously good touch, and Diaby needs to get his way back into form, and this was probably a good game for it. And Watkins is never going to be dropped. I think we don't have the other striker. But I just think it's nice to be back to that place, even though we're missing players, where we've got this embarrassment of riches. Bailey isn't a player that needs to find form and prove himself anymore. He's done that. You've got Watkins, who's firing on all cylinders. Diaby, yeah, is off the boil, but it's still having a decent first season. And I think we're in a really good spot when we're looking at juggling players who are having that good a time of things.
Yeah, Bailey's kind of the latest, isn't he, of these players that have just gone on to another level after since working with Emery. And I do remember, I probably mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, I did do an article in the summer about Bailey when he kind of perhaps had that opportunity maybe to move away or go to Saudi Arabia and become very, very rich, yeah. even richer than he is already. And, you know, he could have done that, but it feels like he's chosen football. He's chosen to go, actually, I've had this incredible opportunity. This world-class coach has dropped into my lap or into the dressing room where I am. And I'd be silly not to at least try to make the most of that. And I think a lot of the players have done that. But I think certainly in Leon Bailey's case, he's really shown what he's all about. And we're getting the performances from him that maybe it's sort of reversed, hasn't it, with him and Diaby. You know, Diaby is in Bailey's position as of kind of 6 months ago, and Bailey's what we were hoping for from Diaby. But like you say, neither of them are, you know, Diaby's far from ineffective. You know, he's still putting the numbers up, and he could have had a hat-trick really in this game. He missed a couple of really good chances, and it's never good to miss chances, but at least he's getting them, and he's trying to take them, and he got his goal, and that will give him a lot of confidence, I think. He's an excellent player.
Oh, he's superb, and he's having a quiet few weeks, but this is the joy of having players competing for positions, is you almost don't miss him when he's been on the bench. He's our record signing. He was setting the world alight start of the season. Mm. But because Bailey is in such good form, you don't miss him as much. And that's why competition for places is so important. And on the Bailey front, I mean, Craig pulled me up on this when I was on with him a couple of weeks ago. I've been hypercritical of Bailey, and I'm completely wrong this year. He has changed as a player. I think Emery said after the City game that he always had the talent, it was the application to come in, not just in matches, but every day in training and put it in. And we're seeing that. And I think we're seeing a change in him confidence-wise too. He seems to have done more interviews in the last 6 weeks than in his entire Villa career. He's always got the mic after the game. He's quoted in the press, and he seems to be putting himself forwards for that. And I think that's the sign of someone who's finally comfortable where he is and confident where he is. And it's fantastic news because, you know, he needed it for his career, and Villa needed it because we spent a lot of money on him. We were all very excited by him. And again, if he can carry on at the form he's currently showing, then we're going to be fighting off offers for him in the summer, not looking to offload him. And it's as you say, it's a good problem to have. And it probably gives Diaby the breathing room to miss a few chances against Burnley, to have a few weeks on the bench, knowing that we've got another pace merchant who can kind of cover his absence.
Yeah. But the other thing is, I mean, it isn't purely about the pace. These are, you know, footballers, you know, playing really effective games, aren't they? And it feels like, I remember someone saying about, this is a strange reference, but someone saying about Robert Snodgrass when we had him on loan, that even when he's having a stinker, he does something, you know, in the game. He tries to affect the game, and, you know, just putting in a cross, you know, having a shot, whatever it happens to be, he's trying to affect the game. And that's how I feel about these two players. Neither of them go missing ever, you know, and they're always looking to do the things that they're being asked to do. You know, they're not taking matters into their own hands. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, they're not losing their temper or, you know, or getting too frustrated. Although, you know, a bit of frustration is not a bad thing if you're not doing well. But they're continuously picking themselves up and having another go. And I really admire that. I think that's great. And that's obviously the freedom, in a sense, that they're given by the manager. You know, put yourself out there.
Yeah, I think freedom's really the right word for it, because we're not a team that plays cavalier football. We play entertaining football, but it's very structured, right? We're not jam-packed full of flair players. We've got good players who are technically good and hard-working, who play in a very distinct way. But I'd say Bailey and Diaby are put more on the flair side of things. You know, they're the classic tricky winger who are going to run at their man and do something magic. And the good thing about what we're doing is Emery creates space for them to do that. Bailey runs at his man constantly. He doesn't always get it right, but as you say, he's empowered to run at his man constantly. And he's almost that X factor in a team that plays very structured football. He's the wild card that can create that moment for us, who can, against a team like Burnley, can break down their defensive line. And I think it speaks volumes to the way we're coached and Emery as a manager, that he accommodates players like that and as you say, empowers them to do their thing. Because, you know, I was complaining for a long time that Bailey didn't defend, and he still probably doesn't defend that much, but Emery doesn't want him to anymore. He's built the system in such a way that he doesn't have to do that. And I think it's really good to know, especially kind of with a window coming up, that no matter what player comes in, it seems like Emery can get the best out of them. There's very few players at Villa who've got worse since he's come in.
Yeah. The other thing I love that I was thinking about the other day is that in any other sort of, whether it was Gerrard or Dean Smith previously, if he'd have had these two players, they would have played either side of Watkins, wouldn't they? And in this system, that's not the case. They play pretty much on the same side. And that can look strange because it feels like they're in the same, they're occupying each other's space almost. But they're not, they're dovetailing. It's really effective how one goes and the other one, and then they support each other down that side. And I find that fascinating, that a manager, you know, because you would expect them to just play either side of the striker and kind of be pacey wingers, wouldn't you, on either side? But it just doesn't work like that in Emery's head.
Yeah, I'd love to go inside his head. I bet you it's a wonderful place to be. It's just because you say we morph constantly in game, and I find it really interesting. We've been on TV a lot recently, and I feel like every game they get our formation wrong. Not that it matters particularly, but they put the formation up and they get it wrong every single game. They'll say that we're going to a back three because Constance at right back, or they'll put Bailey up front when he's clearly starting right wing. And I think as Villa fans, we've got used to this kind of metamorphosis that the team goes through on the pitch. Like, they might start in 4-4-2, but that's not how we attack the goal. And we've got really used to seeing the players move around like that. And I found it really interesting that the rest of the league perhaps hasn't got on to that point yet. And it's really a joy to watch. And I think as Villa fans, we're very lucky to be watching this kind of football. Or maybe we've just been starved of it for so long, but it feels great to be finally watching modern football.
It's not luck, Dan. It's years of toil.
We've earned this.
We've earned this. Even if it is just a year, you know, we've learned this. We've earned this this time, haven't we? So, gotta make the most of it.
You were obviously at the game on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Sunday. I didn't get to watch it, but how was it in the crowd? Because especially after the United game, was the crowd a little bit edgy, especially with the way we conceded goals, or was there still that support there?
Yeah, it was a little bit edgy. I mean, obviously the previous games, the City game, the Arsenal game, and even the Sheffield United game, there was a real sort of atmosphere, you know, loud and vociferous atmosphere. But it wasn't so much for this. It was a little bit like, well, you know, you messed up the other day, now we want you to put it right, sort of thing. And it was a bit like that. And for the first time as well, when we were at 2-2, I felt like there was a bit of unease in the crowd in terms of the way we were playing, quite the slow build up and that kind of thing, which we weren't doing anything different. It's just, I think people, because we were playing 10 men as well, I think people wanted us to be a bit more sort of direct, really. And that's never going to happen. You know, people can want that all they like, you know. It's just not the way it's going to be. And we play this slow, slow, quick, you know, because 1 minute we're you know, they're sort of ambling around and knocking it about between themselves, and the next minute they're in the penalty area. And it's that quick. It just opens up that quickly. And you just got to be patient and wait for it. And then if it doesn't work, they recycle it and go in at another angle, don't they? It's just so impressive. But for the first time in a while, I felt there was a little bit of discontent with that, I think, which was a bit of a shame, but maybe a little bit understandable as well.
Maybe there's fan fatigue. I mean, we've had a game every 3 days, as I say. Maybe the fans just put it all in against City and Arsenal and are now needing a bit of a break on the sidelines.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're going to have different atmospheres in different games. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, you know, it was still, you know, they still backed the team throughout the game, but there was these little grumbles here and there, which I guess you get everywhere, don't you? But yeah, it was generally supportive, and obviously the weird one was the Diaby goal. It didn't feel like there was much celebration because I think everyone thought he was Watkins was offside. I know I did. So I kind of stood up and just waited for the decision for however long it took. It's, don't get me on.
We don't have time. But I mean, maybe the nature of the goals we conceded too. They were sloppy goals. It felt like me, and all I've got to go on is the highlights. But they both felt like sloppy goals to concede, and I think that doesn't help either because we've. I mean, the Aston Villa goal giveaway cup has been slightly conspicuous by its absence in recent weeks. So it feels strange to be shipping goals like that. And I think, yeah, that always puts you on edge as a fan too.
The one thing I would say about that is I think the first goal was sloppy because of the marking that we didn't quite get that right. But the second goal, I think, is a goal that teams can score against Villa. Because of the way we play, no one did anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just normally the striker doesn't take that chance as well as Lyle Foster did on that occasion. I think he got the ball completely under control and drove at the goal and finished beautifully, you know. So on another day, you know, Villa nicked the ball off him, or he takes a heavy touch, or he misses, you know, he snatches at the shot, you know. But he took it so well. I would be more inclined to give credit to the striker there for that goal. Personally, it felt wrong because they were down to 10 men and they'd equalised. You know, so that was from my perspective. I don't know what you thought of that.
No, goal. That's fair. Was that the one that came from a flick on? It feels like a lifetime ago now. And I think that is a way teams can hurt us because of the way we play. But teams don't really do that anymore, do they? The flick-on feels like a particularly strange thing these days. But I think you're right. Maybe I wasn't serving him well enough. It was a good finish. And I think you're right. It was the fact that we were down to 10 men, we were kind of huffing and puffing a little bit. I felt like we'd won the game at that point. And then to throw it away, it felt a little bit bad. But sure enough, there was joy at the final whistle no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had obviously Berger was sent off, wasn't he? For his second yellow, which was, you know, just daft, really. And then, I mean, Villa were kind of going for the kill at that point, and Diaby and Ramsey had absolute gilt-edge chances, didn't they, which they missed. I thought the Ramsey one looked easier than it was. I know it's right in front of the goal, but it's bobbled up, hasn't it? And
he's being kind to him there, Andy. Just because you walk dogs near him occasionally, you've got to be nice to him. But I think even you or I could put that one in. Like an easy one. But again, he's rusty, isn't he? He's like us after a couple of weeks without podcasting. He's trying to remember how to do things again.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I'm sure this will sound brilliant in the edit. But he didn't have the chance to edit his finish there. But we felt like we were on the ascendancy and we were just going to get the third, maybe the fourth goal. And of course, they broke away and Foster equalised. And I thought it was a good goal, and it is a goal that we are susceptible to. Mm-hmm. I think the way we play, and it wasn't anyone's fault particularly. I think Torres was on by that stage as well, so it wasn't even a case of Longley kind of messing up there. It was Torres who was on the field. But I mean, what do you think about this? This high line, do you think it is going to start causing us a few problems, or do you think once they get the personnel back and get everyone get it going again, do you think they'll be okay?
I think it's our strength. We're not going to stop playing like it. I always think back, the last time I saw a high line this good was that classic Arsenal back line, and that only worked because it was the same four defenders week in, week out. And I think communication is so important, and you also just need to instinctively know where your centre-back partner or your right-back's going to be. And when you're juggling around that back line, I just don't think, no matter how good the replacements are, it's not the same. I think, you know, we had a left-back who's played a couple of games in there, a left-sided centre-back who's only played a couple of games, and Konsa moved to right back, it was juggled all over the place. So it's not going to be as effective. But I think it's still our best tool. We're so good at it. We're so much better than any other team in the league at it, or any other team in Europe for that matter at it. No one's got our numbers. And VAR, much as I hate it, is there to bail us out more often than not. So I think we're not going to stop doing it until they change the offside rule, because Emery's a pragmatist. He knows that it's our best way of shutting other teams down. And I think it's been one of the secrets of our success. But like all things, when you've got, you know, you don't have all the parts working there, it doesn't go quite as well. To use a crude analogy, if you had a Rolls Royce and you started putting bits of engine from a Morris Minor in there, it's not going to run as smoothly, is it? And I think that's kind of where Villa are at the moment. We've got bits of Morris Minor going in there for a couple of weeks, and it's been rattling around.
The Morris Minor from Barcelona.
That's a fair
French
point,
international
actually.
Morris Minor. It's amazing, isn't it? We were talking about this, weren't we? That we're getting edgy about, you know, a lone player from Barcelona coming into the defence, where, you know, two or three years ago he'd have been playing, starting every game probably, wouldn't he, if we'd had him. Or maybe not, because Tyrone Mings. But anyway, you get the point.
I get your point.
Get the point I'm making there. Yeah. Of course, we did go on to win the game, and it was a penalty. It's probably the fitting way really to decide this game in the final minutes of the match. It was a foul on John Duran, who had come on as a sub. Douglas Luiz scored the penalty, although I wasn't entirely sure it had gone in at first. It bounced off the bar and down and then into the net somehow. I don't know what he put some sort of spin on it, I think, by the looks of it. What did you make of the penalty decision? And also, could this be a bit of a boost for Luiz, who's obviously been perhaps slightly below par in recent games?
Yeah, I mean, firstly on the penalty, I mean, it was a penalty. It's a soft one, but it's a penalty. But I hadn't seen it, and then I watched Match of the Day, and I just saw penalty scored for Villa, so I assumed it was kind of standard. He just nestled it in the back of the net. And then I knew we'd won the game, but watching Match of the Day, my heart was in my mouth for the moment, watching it kind of bounce off the bar, then off the line, then off the bar again. But
and
fair play to Luiz. He's a player who's looked like he's running on fumes in recent weeks, and that will do him the world of good confidence-wise, and will do the squad the world of good. As I said earlier, kind of the best teams win ugly. They win late. They win even when they're not playing well. And I think that could be a vital extra 2 points when it comes to the end of the season. And over the festive period, the late draw against Sheffield United, the late win against Burnley, those are huge points for Villa. And I think a testament to the character of the team. And especially Douglas Luiz, as I say, he's not played particularly well in the last three games, but he's played every minute of them pretty much, hasn't he? And he's not shirked from a challenge. He's been in the face of the opposition, in the face of referees, and I've really enjoyed watching that steely side of him playing. And good to see the fishing celebration out again as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, it was. Because it's felt like a few weeks since he scored. His numbers are pretty good. I think it's 7 now for the season, and obviously he's on penalties. He's had a few penalties. I think he has missed having Kamara there as well, hasn't he? And, you know, I think that changes his workload, doesn't it, when Kamara's not there. Obviously, he had Dendonka against Man United, which, although Dendonka scored, it probably wasn't quite the same level of support that he gets from Kamara. But, I mean, he's just such a good player to watch, and we want to see him back to his best, really. And hopefully, he'll get to have a bit of a break, maybe over the next couple of weeks if Emery can give him next Saturday off. But we'll come on to that. But you know, that might do him the world of good, really. And you know, going into the Everton game after scoring the winner in the last game might be just a boost he needs, really. Wonderful player to watch, even when he's not on form.
It's true about
the way he moves and runs with the ball. He's just so good to watch, isn't he?
He's a class act. And I mean, we're in silly season at the moment. I've seen him linked to Barcelona, to Man City again, to all these teams. And I doubt any of that will happen, but that's how well he's playing and how good a player he is now. That those links don't feel outlandish whatsoever. That feels like exactly the level he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, he will rightly want to explore those options at some point, won't he, if they're there for him. So, you know, but hopefully not this month.
Well, I mean, why go to a team lower than you in the Premier League table or an also ran in Spain when you can play for title contenders in England?
Well, what I would always say to, I mean, obviously players want to you know, push themselves, don't they? And they all believe they can make a difference. But I would just say look at someone like Calvin Phillips, you know, who just hasn't played for 2 years. You know, he's wasted, you know, two of his prime years sitting on the bench at Man City, and it's just been an awful move for him. And okay, Douglas Luiz might play more at Man City, but you don't know. You know, you don't know who else they're going to bring in. You know, he'd be playing instead of possibly Rodri or Bernardo Silva, or, you know, they don't play every week. And at the moment, he's potentially playing in the Champions League for Aston Villa next season. And I think that's something to aim for. And if he is, then he'll be playing every game because he's one of our best players. So I think players don't always think like that, and certainly agents don't. But I think, you know, there are cautionary tales out there for players like Douglas Luiz who might be getting big moves potentially. And I suppose we could talk about the transfer window, really. Villa are in a great position going into January. As we say, finish the year joint top, although Liverpool have kind of moved ahead after their 4-2 win against Newcastle on New Year's Day. Villa have really put themselves in a really strong position for the second half of the season, and will be able to kind of focus now on the league until the Europa Conference League kicks off again in March. The question now is really whether Emery and Monchi et al. Look to reinforce and have a real go at those top four places, or whether they feel they have enough, and with the players returning and that sort of thing, they might choose not to disrupt the balance of the team too much. What are your thoughts on this, and what are the areas? I suppose we mentioned this a little bit, but what are the areas need attention this month, do you think?
A classic case of stick or twist, isn't it? It will never be in a better position in the league, but do you really want to roll the dice on a transfer to, you know, on one hand, it could push you over the line. On the other hand, it might disrupt the chemistry in the dressing room. And I think no one wants that. So I think Monchi will earn his money this January. I don't expect us to see us go out there and make wholesale changes, partly because I think we're under FFP problems at the moment. I think we don't have the money to go spend. And also because I think the blueprint for teams in our position is probably, dare I say it, Leicester when they won the title. They didn't go out there and splash the cash. They stuck with what they had. And I think that's what you do in this situation. But you can always improve around the edges, can't you? And I think the edges is probably where we need improvement. As we say, right back, I love Matty Cash, but it feels like we've moved past him now. And I think we've done that in rapid time. But he started the season well. He just hasn't looked comfortable on the ball in the controllers, we're saying, that Emery wants. And whilst Constance is an able deputy there, you're missing your best centre-back by putting him out there. So if there's a right-back available who's not Callum Chambers, I think we might go for them. And I think that's where we need to strengthen. We've been linked to a lot of strikers, is where we're being linked to. I've seen Timo Werner mentioned and a couple of other lads, which you imagine would be a loan deal, wouldn't you? Just it's tough to bring someone in knowing that Ollie Watkins is the main man and is not going to be dropped. So something like that. But the other thing I wouldn't mind us seeing is, you know, a right back for sure, but maybe a right-footed right winger. I love Leon Bailey out on the right. I think he's fantastic. But sometimes it's, you know, we cut in from both sides and it would be nice to go round a team on the outside occasionally. So I think if there's a right-footed winger out there, I wouldn't mind seeing us add to our ranks there, whether it's in place of Zaniolo or in addition to. But yeah, how about you, Andy? Where do you reckon?
Yeah, well, for sure, right back. I think we'd all also like a, you know, a reasonable backup goalkeeper, wouldn't we? Someone that, yeah, you know, could definitely rely on to do a job. You know, potentially for 3 or 4 games if needed. Hopefully we won't need that, but it would make us all feel a little bit more secure, I think. The striker one's interesting, really, because, like you say, you know, you're not going to get anyone that does what Ollie Watkins does, really. And, you know, which striker is going to want to do that, want to come in and be the deputy, really? I know it sounds like there's been links with John Duran potentially going, I think, on loan, although I'm not totally sure. I know today there was a link to Milan for John Duran, which would be interesting. So yeah, I mean, it's one they obviously want to do. They if rumours are true, then they were on the cusp of signing Tammy Abraham in the summer, before he injured himself. So it's clearly a position they want to do, isn't it? Striker. I'm not sure about other positions, though. I know John Percy talked about possibly wanting another attacking player. In an ideal world, I'd absolutely love Morgan Gibbs-White at Villa. I just think he'd be absolutely sensational behind Ollie Watkins there. I think he'd be superb, but it would cost an absolute fortune to get him out of Forest at the moment. And being a Wolves lad, I don't know whether he'd want to come to Villa, but, you know, I'm not sure. And of course, you know, we don't know whether, you know, how soon Emi Buendia might make an appearance, I suppose, in the next few months as well. So, you know, he would certainly, and I know I've had my differences with Buendia over the time he's been at Villa, but he'd have been an excellent option for us, playing as we have been. I think a really different type of forward to bring in, or, you know, for certain games, or bring off the bench. I think he would have been excellent for us.
Yeah, I feel like we've missed him. I was watching, I don't know if you saw this, the club put out every goal we scored in 2023 as a big long 10-minute video, and I sat down and watched it yesterday. It was great fun. But what I noticed, especially in the early part of the year, just how many goals Buendia was involved with, whether he was on the end of them assisting, or that kind of old Grealish-style pre-assist that's there. I think his name was mentioned more than I remembered it in those early things. And I think you're right. If he could get back from fitness early, then I think that would be huge for Villa at the moment. The proverbial, like, a new signing, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But obviously, you know, he's got a serious one, hasn't he? So, you know, I think if we do see him before the end of the season, it will be a bonus. But, you know, hopefully, you never know with these things, do you? And, you know, we've probably heard less about his injury than Tyrone Mings's. So it'd be interesting to know how he's getting on, really. But, you know, there we go. We'll see. But, yeah, I think right back, goalkeeper, and maybe a backup striker, I think, for me. And then in the summer, maybe we get Gibbs-White.
Bold.
that'd be certainly worth it, I think, worth pursuing. But we move on to this weekend and the FA Cup third round. It's my favourite weekend, I think, of the football season. Not because of Villa, obviously, because we usually lose, but I just love the whole thing, really, and the way it lasts now all over the weekend, and there's games on all the time on terrestrial TV as well. But Villa travel up to Middlesbrough for their tie on Saturday at 5:30. Borough currently sitting 12th in the Championship following a 3-1 defeat at home to Coventry on New Year's Day, and have struggled to really hit the form of last season, which saw them just fall short of promotion in the playoffs. Michael Carrick's team also have an EFL Cup semi-final next week, so they may choose to prioritise that. And they've also had, you know, quite a bit of trouble with injuries, I think, of late. After last year's debacle against Stevenage, Emery will be keen to progress through the cup rounds and may wish to use the games, obviously, to increase a bit of match sharpness in some of the squad players. This will be live on the BBC. So it feels important that Villa kind of show the best of themselves, really, in this one. But how do you expect Emery to kind of shuffle things, considering how leggy the team have looked of late?
Yeah, I wonder if the BBC picked this one as a bit of a banana skin. I wonder if they claimed it before Villa's rise, but
undoubtedly,
yeah, I think that's what they thought. But I don't know. It's an interesting one. Same as you, Andy. I love the cup. Magic of the cup. I'll probably be cutting one out of a cereal packet and wrapping it in tin foil and waving it in the air as is the done thing this time of year. But much as I love the club, what I'd love Villa to do is to rest everyone. Play the kids, play the reserves, play the staff from the club shop. Give you a call, Andy, whatever it takes. Just give the lads a week or two off. I think, you know, winning is contagious and it would be nice to see us continue, but I think that extra bit of time off wouldn't do us any harm. And if we get through the game, great, then we reevaluate. But if we get knocked out here, I wouldn't be too upset either, because we still got the European front we're fighting on. But I'd expect him to rest a lot of players. He's apparently given the players 3 days off after the Burnley game. So, I mean, in theory, they should be well rested. But I'd expect you see Dendonka, you see, Lenglet again. I imagine we'll have Olsen in goal. Cash will hopefully be back by then. Kamara will be fresh, you imagine, after having his feet up for 3 weeks. So I think it will be a mixture of one of those European sides that we've seen from Emery, where he doesn't do wholesale changes, but he juggles it about here and there. Maybe even the lesser spotted Callum Chambers will be seen.
Yeah, I did wonder that. I think, like you say, there are a couple of players, first team players that perhaps need the game. Kamara would be one. Matty Cash, like you say, would be another one. Moreno and Ramsey do need minutes. Yeah. You know, they absolutely need that game time. And I think after the Burnley game, I messaged the group and said, I don't want to see any of the first team players playing against Middlesbrough. But I think realistically, I think we will see a reasonably strong side. You know, and someone like Diaby, I mean, you know, any opportunity really to maybe, you know, get a goal, get an assist, you know, just to embed that bit more confidence, I think, in certain players. But I mean, players like say Martinez, Watkins, Douglas Luiz, even Ezri Konsa. Mm-hmm. Ezri Konsa needs a rest desperately. And Pau Torres, you know, he's not really fully fit, and I think just that extra fortnight would really help him as well. So yeah, I'm not quite as militant about it as I was a few days ago. I've sort of thought about it and thought, you know, it might be useful, but you always run the risk of injuries and stuff like that when you play football matches. But I think there are certain players in the squad that could really use the game and hopefully, you know, get through, because you know, you'd like to get into the latter stages of this and try and win it ultimately, but we just have such a bad record in this competition that I feel like I write it off every year. And the FA Cup for me is something that I enjoy from a neutral perspective every year. So it's never a thing I expect Villa to be involved in. So
I'm the same. I don't look forward to it. But Emery likes the games, doesn't he? He likes his team to have a game regularly, enjoys the work. And I think it will be a good challenge for him to see if even a depleted Villa side can get something out of this. Because who knows, if you're in the hat for the next week, then you're still in with a shot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's in the cup. It's nice to not be playing Premier League teams as well. I don't like it when you get two Premier League.
Yeah, it's boring, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they always show it on the telly. Obviously, Liverpool and Arsenal, I think, are playing the weekend. You know, I think it's nice if you play a lower team. I would love to get Warsaw one year, because I think that'd be excellent. But they're playing Southampton, so they'll struggle, I think, perhaps to get through that. But they're in good form, so we'll see. But yeah. Just a a good weekend. I think it's the purest form of club football is the third round weekend, and I'm really looking forward to it. So how about a prediction for Middlesbrough away?
I think a scrappy Villa win, but a win all the same. Let's go 2-1 Villa.
2-1. Okay, I'm going to go 3-1. Yeah, I think we'll concede because we always do. I think we'll have enough and we'll get through and we'll be in the hat, and you know, be nice to have an away, one of those horrible away trips to a non-league team or something. That'd be great, you know, but we'll see. No, but that's great. I think that's all we've got time for, but thanks for joining me. Nice to speak to you again. It's been a good while, so it's nice to chew the fat about the Villa after Christmas.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Andy. And yeah, Happy New Year, listeners.
Yeah, Happy New Year to everyone. And thanks for listening. And hopefully next week we'll be talking about who we've got in the next round of the FA Cup and looking ahead to Everton away on the 14th of January. But yeah, thanks for listening, and obviously head over to undergaslitlamp.com for any articles that may appear over there, and give us a follow on all the social media channels just to get the heads up really of what's happening with us and when the shows are coming. But obviously, if you are going to Middlesbrough, have a really good FA Cup weekend. I'll be watching it on my sofa. But until next week, stay safe and up the Villa.